Howdy, regulars. This is Regular Dispatch 58. It's July 20th, 2020. 25 years ago, when I was 19, I became a professional golfer. I suppose that if I fed the right pieces of data to one of our modern electronic brain machines, it would perform a few gyrations and shortly afterwards inform me as to how many hundreds of thousands of shots I have hit on practice fairways, how many thousands of shots I've struck in competition, how many times I've taken three putts when there was absolutely no reason for doing so, and all the rest of it. Like most professional golfers, I have a tendency to remember my poor shots a shade more vividly than the good ones. The one or two per round, seldom more, which come off exactly as I intend they should. However, having worked hard on my golf, with all the mentality and all the physical resources available to me, I've managed to play some very good shots at very important stages of major tournaments. To cite one example, which many of my friends remember with particular fondness, and I too for that matter, in 1950 at Marion, I needed a 4 on the 72nd to tie for first in the Open. To get that 4, I needed to hit an elusive, well-trapped, slightly plateaued green from about 200 yards out. There are easier shots in golf. I went with a 2-iron and played what was, in my honest judgment, one of the best shots of my last round, perhaps one of the best I played during the tournament. The ball took off on a line for the left center of the green, held its line firmly, bounced on the front edge of the green, and finished some 40 feet from the cup. It was all I could have asked for. I then got down in 2 putts for my 4, and this enabled me to enter the playoff for the title, which I was thankful to win the following day. I bring up this incident not for the pleasure of retasting the sweetness of a big moment, but rather because I have discovered in many conversations that the view I take of this shot, and others like it, is markedly different from the view most spectators seem to have formed. They are inclined to glamorize the actual shot since it was hit in a pressureful situation. They tend to think of it as something unique in itself, something almost inspired, you might say, since the shot was just what the occasion called for. I don't see it that way at all. I didn't hit that shot then, that late afternoon at Marion. I'd been practicing that shot since I was 12 years old. After all, the point of tournament golf is to get command of a swing, which, the more pressure you put on it, the better it works. In some respects, tournament golf and golf are as foreign to each other as ice hockey and tennis. In other respects, they're not. The professional, shooting for his livelihood on the circuit, with his pride, some pleasure, and thousands of dollars at stake, and the average golfer trying to produce his best game on weekends, with his pride, his pleasure, and a dollar Nassau at stake, are both searching to master the movements that will result in a repeating swing, a correct, powerful, repeating swing. This can be stated categorically. It is utterly impossible for any golfer to play good golf without a swing that will repeat. How then do you build a swing that you can depend on to repeat in all kinds of wind and weather, under all kinds of presses and pressure? Having devoted the bulk of my waking hours and a few of my sleeping hours for a quarter of a century to the pursuit of the answer, I now believe that what I've learned can be of tremendous assistance to all golfers. That is my reason for undertaking the series of lessons. I do not propose to deal in theory. What I have learned by laborious trial and error. Watching a good player do something that looked right to me, stumbling across something that felt right to me, experimenting with something to see if it helped or hindered, adopting it if it helped, refining it sometimes, discarding it if it didn't help, sometimes discarding it later if it proved undependable in competition. Experimenting continually with new ideas and old ideas and all manner of variations until I arrived at a set of fundamentals that appeared to me to be right, because they accomplished a very definite purpose. A set of fundamentals which proved to me they were right because they stood up and produced under all kinds of pressure. To put it briefly, the information I will be presenting is a sifting of the knowledge I've tried to acquire since I first met up with golf when I was 12 and knew almost immediately I wanted to make the game my life work. Up to a considerable point, as I see it, there's nothing difficult about golf. Nothing. I see no reason, truly, why the average golfer, if he goes about it intelligently, shouldn't play in the 70s. And I mean by playing the type of shots a fine golfer plays. Somehow, most average golfers get it in their head that they can't play a long shot correctly, that they haven't got the skill or coordination to execute a full swing. Putting or chipping, that's another story. The average golfer feels he can cope pretty successfully with those parts of the game. All they require is a short swing. In my opinion, the average golfer underrates himself. He has all the physical equipment he needs to execute the full golf swing and hit full golf shots. A full swing is nothing more or less than an extension of the short swing. Like everything, it takes some learning. But learning the correct movements is 10 times less difficult than he thinks. In fact, once you're on the right track in golf, doing things the right way takes a lot less effort than the wrong way does. I realize that in some ways I can be a demanding man, and that some things are harder for certain people to do than I may appreciate. But it really cuts me up to watch some golfer sweating over his shots on the practice tee, throwing away his energy to no constructive purpose, 9 times out of 10 doing the same thing wrong he did years and years back when he first took up golf. This sort of golfer obviously loves the game, or he wouldn't be out there practicing it. I cannot watch him for long. His frustration, all that fruitless expenditure of energy, really bothers me. If he stands out there on the practice tee till he's 90, he's not going to improve. He's going to get worse and worse because he's going to get his bad habits more and more deeply ingrained. I know that thousands of golfers console themselves with the game being an avenue to exercise and companionship, which is wonderful. But every golfer, at the bottom of his heart, wants to play the game relatively well. To do that takes some application, some thought, some effort. But the golfer who goes about this wisely will play good golf and should go on to enjoy his golf increasingly the rest of his life. The greatest pleasure is obtained by improving. Before we commence the instruction, let me tell you more specifically what we will be doing and what we hope to accomplish. To begin with, the book will comprise 5 lessons. In each one, we will be presenting the golfer reader with 1 or 2 fundamentals for him to practice and become well acquainted with, so that he will be building a progressively sound foundation on which the ensuing fundamentals can be added. The golfer who devotes a half hour daily to practicing the points we will be bringing out during these 5 lessons will, I believe, improve his game and his scoring immediately and decisively. The degree of improvement his game will show will vary with the quality of each individual's application. By continuing to practice and apply these fundamentals, the golfer will continue to improve his game, quite often far beyond his fondest dreams. I do genuinely believe this. The average golfer is entirely capable of building a repeating swing and breaking 80. If he learns to perform a small number of correct movements, and conversely, it follows, eliminates a lot of movements which tend to keep the swing from repeating. In these lessons, we will certainly not be attempting to cover all of golf or even 1/100th of this almost inexhaustible subject. What we will be concerning ourselves with are the facts of golf, which have proved themselves to be the true fundamentals, fundamentals that can be checked and not simply left to the imagination or to guesswork. This is all that is really needed. In the opinion of friends of mine who are out-and-out traditionalists, many of my ideas on the golf swing are quite revolutionary. Some of them are, I believe. As I see it, some measures long esteemed to be of paramount importance in the golf swing are really not important at all. On the other hand, certain other measures that have been considered to be of only secondary importance or of no importance at all strike me as being invaluable. To be, in fact, the true fundamentals of the modern golf swing. Another thing I am an advocate of, that kind of teaching which stresses the exact nature and feel of the movements a player makes to achieve the results he wants. If you were teaching a child how to open a door, you wouldn't open the door for him and then describe at length how the door looked when it was open. No, you would teach him how to turn the doorknob so that he could open the door himself. Similarly, in these lessons, our method will stress what you do to achieve the result you're after, the actions that cause the result. These are the true fundamentals of golf. For all the personal touches and mannerisms which are part of their individual styles, I have never seen a great player whose method of striking the ball did not include the fundamentals we will emphasize. Otherwise, it is as simple as that. That golfer could not be a great player. The grip. Good golf begins with a good grip. This statement, I realize, packs as much explosive punch as announcing the startling fact that the battery in baseball is composed of a pitcher and a catcher. Moreover, for most golfers, the grip is the drabbest part of the swing. There's no glamour to it. They see it accomplishing nothing active, nothing decisive. On the other hand, for myself and other serious golfers, there is an undeniable beauty in the way a fine player sets his hands on the club. Walter Hagen, for instance, had a beautiful grip, delicate and at the same time powerful. It always looked to me as if Hagen's hands had been especially designed to fit on a golf club. Of the younger players today, Jack Burke gets his hands on the club very handsomely. No doubt a professional golfer's admiration for an impressive grip comes from his knowledge that, far from being a static, still life sort of thing, the grip is the heartbeat of the action of the golf swing. Logically, it has to be. The player's only contact with the ball is through the club head, and his only direct physical contact with the club is through his hands. In the golf swing, the power is originated and generated by movements of the body. As the power builds up, it is transferred from the body to the arms, which in turn transfer it through the hands to the club head. It multiplies itself enormously with every transfer, like a chain action in physics. Or to use a more familiar example, think of the children's game of Snap the Whip, where the element at the end of the chain in golf, the club head, is going thousands of times faster than the element which originated the velocity. This chain action depends on a proper grip. With a defective grip, a golfer cannot hold the club securely at the top of the backswing. The club will fly out of control every time. And if the club is not controlled by a power grip, the power of a golfer generates with his body never reaches the club through his hands on the downswing, and the club head cannot be accelerated to its maximum. All right, I could go on and on. It's fun. Again, I've played golf twice in the last decade, probably. But when I started playing it in around junior high, I think my dad brought this book home, or I got it probably at a Taylor Books, if anybody remembers that family chain back in the day. This is written by Ben Hogan in the 50s, hence his reference to how for the professional golfer, there are thousands of dollars at stake. These days, you can win well north of $1 million in any weekend golf tournament if you're one of the elite players in the world. The dollars are staggering at this point. I love the analogy here. There's just so much to it. So we've been talking about education and all kinds of things, learning things, learning to be, learning to know, learning to do. And Hogan's point here is it doesn't do you any good to know only to learn to know how to open a door. You just got to learn to do it. And the analogy of how you would teach a child to open a door is really cool. And I think this applies for all of us. I also love when he begins his five fundamental lessons. I read his little preface. There's other stuff from apparently this book came about after these were released in serialized columns in Sports Illustrated in 57 or something like that. And he starts with the grip. Let me see what I'm trying to find the chapter headings. It's like the grip, the stance. Here we go. The grip. 2, stance and posture. 3, the first part of the swing. 4, the second part of the swing. 5, summary and review. That's it. Short and sweet. Really cool drawings in here too, by the way, like kind of like the Wall Street Journal dot point illustrations. They're just, it's just line art, but, very specific, breaking it down and And you have to start with the grip. How are you going to hold the club? I remember as a youngster reading it too and just going through it and getting my hands and fingers situated just right. And he advocates in here too, before you even start to get out to the course or anything, that you want to, in this chapter on the grip, he's advocating basically, at first, like you're practicing like 10 or 15 minutes every day. And then you're practicing for, I think it's a few weeks, like a half hour a day. Just literally just the grip, just that. Because after all, if you don't get that right, your foundation is ruined. To his point, you're transferring power, from your whole body moving, and the only place that you're actually able to do that is where the only place where your body makes contact to the golf club is the grip, is your hands. And so you have to have that just right. And with respect to talent code and some of the other things we've talked about recently, like the idea of daily practice and very specific goals. I like also that one of the fine and confounding things, the best and worst parts of golf, is you're on your own. And his Hogan's contention here that the average golfer can shoot in the 70s, that is a bold claim. That is a bold claim. The average golfer is often just trying to break 100, really. And bogey golf is great in my estimation, and that's like a 90 often. So if you break 90, you've done better than bogey golf. One additional shot per hole, if you will. And so saying that the average golfer can get to where they can shoot in the 70s is a big, bold claim. And I think it also speaks to, I just finished David Goggins' book, Can't Hurt Me. And one of Goggins' big contentions is we all set too low of a ceiling. We forget that we've even done this. We just get comfortable. It reminds me, I know almost nothing of Kierkegaard, but there's this quote, and it is this: people settle for a level of despair they can tolerate and call it happiness. And that's this is an existential philosopher. That's a profound and general statement, not merely about golf, but it's the same idea. It's the same idea. And with respect to Hogan taking the time to crystallize from all of the sifting that he had done, he picks up a golf club apparently at 12, he turns pro not that long thereafter, and becomes one of the most successful golfers of all time. Really quite the biography. Fort Worth, Texan, I believe. Maybe get into his biography someday. The biography of some of these athletes is, they're often the greatest stories. I've just started one, a book about Curt Flood, and I hope to bring that up here someday because, he's an incredibly significant figure. In general, what I know about him is he filed suit against Major League Baseball and helped break open what we now know as modern free agency. Really, really fascinating stuff. But Ben Hogan is sifting through all of his lessons. And what he does here is he crystallizes it into a book that provides, you got to learn to know, but you also got to learn to do. There's no point in knowing, just reading books about golf. The only way to learn about golf is to go out and play the game. I suppose one could be a historian of golf, become a journalist covering golf, and you don't need to know how to play, theoretically. But if you want to play, if you want to be able to shoot under 100, under 90, and to Hogan's point, under 80, then it takes playing. But where he begins is the grip, and it reminds me, too, of just literally the phrase, get a grip. Get a grip. get a grip on this. It means kind of to have a handle on something and understanding and to get control of oneself. Get a grip. Do we have a grip on the problem? Get a grip on the problem. Get a grip on yourself. Get a grip. And that's where Hogan starts. It's like, get a grip. You got to get a grip. And so for all of us too, do we have a grip on what ideas are coursing through your head when you woke up this morning? The balance sheet of your mind. What's in it right now? Who put it there? How did it get there? What do you spend your time thinking about? It's going to be very difficult to have a great day unless you get a grip, unless you have a handle on things. And so the idea, it's a very mindfulness kind of thing, if you possibly. Hogan advocating, breaking it down, by the way, I'm talking like the every finger in your both of your hands, how they relate to each other, where the golf club is coming in, how tightly or not tightly you're holding it, all of that. And then practicing just that for days and days. That's it. Like literally just getting super comfortable with that. Get a grip. Really interesting stuff. It doesn't make me want to, it does inspire me to consider playing again. We'll see. I mean, the thing about playing golf is it's not cheap in time or money. It's a good 4 or 5 hours from couch to couch, at least, to get out there, play around, come home. I mean, I suppose I could, that's just a sad excuse, and I could play 9 holes or do whatever, or just start by going to the driving range and that kind of thing. And it would be fun with the regulars or a regular group. It's a great way to spend some time. And 100%, if it turns out that the kiddo's into it, then that will become a huge pastime. That's fun to think about. With respect to getting a grip too, that also does remind me by analogy of Gatto and the 7-lesson school teacher and the lessons taught by this system, which include basically incoherence and confusion and all this dependence. That's the opposite of having a grip on a situation. It's almost, and his allegation to an extent is that by design, it's keeping people from getting a grip. So all that stuff is on my mind. Golf's a beautiful game. I still love to watch golf, by the way. It's gripping sports. It's beautiful scenery. It's hard to do. Those players play at an unbelievably high level. And so it's often just incredible sports drama. And it translates to television very, very well. So that's fun. A programming note, I did get up with the alarm at 4:50 this morning. Had a great, productive morning. Extra long walk of the dog, which the dog appreciates. Went all over, and I'm enjoying it. I didn't set an alarm over the weekend, Friday night. For some stupid reason, I woke up around 2:30 and was awake for an hour, so then I slept till 7. But Sunday morning, I got up at 5 with no alarm, and that's a good sign. If that just becomes sort of when I wake up, that's great. I might try to dial it a little earlier. I'm not getting this posted at 7, but I'm getting it posted in the morning, hopefully. There was a break in the action. I actually had to do this in two pieces. This little recorder ran out of batteries. That's happened once before. Forces me to do a little editing. We'll see when I can find the time to squeeze that in today. But hopefully I'll get this posted for y'all. And we will go from there. Have a great one. Thanks.